You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW Radio. We're speaking with State Senator Ron Winterton, Representatives Brian King and Tim Quinn, and we'll be back with more. Stay tuned. And welcome back. You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW Radio. I'm here with Emily Means, our legislative reporter. I'm Leslie Thatcher, and we've got three representatives here, Senator Ron Winterton, Representative Brian King, and Representative Tim Quinn. We're going to be taking your questions here in just a little bit. I did get a text here before we jump into short-term rentals. The question was, please ask Representative Quinn and Senator Winterton why they voted to make it harder for citizens to do referendum petitions. They've been done in Wasatch County both times. The citizens voted with the petition gatherers around 65% to 70%. Now it's virtually impossible to do with the voter participation areas and having to turn in signatures weekly. It's the citizens' constitutional right to petition their government. Senator?
That's right. We're not trying to take that away from anybody, but you're finding more and more that as things get on the ballot, that even being new in the legislature, I learned a lot this year at what you can and can't do. You take Medicaid, I mean, we had that on the ballot. And everybody said, we shouldn't touch that. Had we left it the way that the voters said, we would have been, that program would have been bankrupt in 2 years. We have to balance the budget, and we had to make it sustainable. We went in, and the Senate Bill 96 addressed this. Everybody got what they wanted on the ballot, plus some more. But we did it in a way in which we can afford it, sustainable. I might mention that a lot of this was hinged upon whether or not we would get a waiver from the federal government. That waiver has come, and it's a 70-30 split. Now, that makes what we did even that much better for the state of Utah. And so if we're going to put things on the ballot, let's make sure that it's constitutional, that we can afford it, and it's sustainable. Just because we can afford it this year doesn't mean that we can sustain it in the years to come. And that's what the budget's all about, is ongoing commitments that we make as a state. How do we sustain that? If we don't have the revenue, we have no business spending surplus money, because everybody gets their hopes up that, okay, now we've got it this year, we're going to get it next year.
Yeah, but that's
we can't do it.
And you're talking specifically about the ballot initiative. The question was had to do with the referendum petition. And this is something that folks in Wasatch County,
right,
the county council had made a decision on some planning and zoning.
I think the same thing applies there, but on a local level. And when
so why make it harder, though, for them? I mean, it's like if our representatives aren't doing the job we think they should do, why can't we at least, you know, do what, you know, now a majority, when you're talking about a 70% in favor of a referendum petition being presented?
I think that you're seeing more and more of that, and to the point, having come from local government and serving there, if people want to get involved, they need to come to meetings and be involved. They don't do it behind the screen and try to force an opinion on the rest of the people, because you're hearing a few people saying, you go to this last election, those that voted was motivated to be there. Those that kind of are quiet didn't get involved. And you saw a big turnaround in the election results. And that's the same thing here, is that you'll have some groups that are motivated and get something through. They get educated on it, and the rest of them haven't bothered. And so I don't know that it's really fair way to make legislation or public policy. I think that it needs to have a discussion on both sides. And I'm trying to remember back on the discussion on the floor on that, and it was becoming so, there's no need to have local officials because we're going to do everything on the ballot, or we're going to push our will that way. And so it seems like a no-win situation. So we did make it harder, hoping that there's going to be people coming to the table to talk about the issues.
I think that there would be lots of people, though, in Wasatch County saying that citizens were involved in the public meetings and the county council just didn't listen to them. And again, then they go out and get petitions, and now apparently the legislature has now made it more difficult for them to be able to at least put it to the people. Again, it's a vote in November. Do you want to?
Tim could talk about it, but
your, yeah.
But you know, locally, a lot of times it comes down to the education. I mean, we've talked about the problem with tax reform and people just not being informed, and if people are not informed, that's not a way to make good policy. It's just them against us. I sat through a lot of those meetings last year as I campaigned, and there is a lot of emotion, a lot of opinions, but no facts. You can't make good decisions on opinions and that. Let's have the facts. I like science. I like facts. Then we come out with something that's really good. But just have one side favorite against somebody else, I don't know that that's great.
So, Leslie, I think what our texter is referring to is some legislation that Representative Brad Daw sponsored. And he also sponsored a bill that would delay the implementation of ballot initiatives so that the legislature can kind of tweak and make adjustments where they see fit. And, you know, we saw this happen with Props 2 and 3, medical cannabis, and mm-hmm. Medicaid expansion. But I think what people are wondering is, will it be the norm for the legislature to make these sweeping changes to ballot initiatives? And if so, what is the point? What is the point of running a ballot initiative? I don't know if Brian wants to respond to that, because I'm a lot of your constituents have some thoughts on the Medicaid expansion and medical cannabis.
Absolutely. Both Medicaid expansion and medical cannabis passed by overwhelming numbers in my district. And I was reluctant to go in. There were two things. Prop 2, which was medical cannabis, we dealt with that in a special session less than a month after the election. And that's the thing that troubled me, is for us to rush in and basically change things as quickly as we did gave me concern that it was saying to the people of the state of Utah, we know better than you do what we want here. And we made some significant changes to Proposition 2 on medical cannabis that was passed. Some of them I thought were good. Some of them improved what was passed in Prop 2, some not so much. But the more troubling thing to me was I didn't see why we couldn't wait until the session to do it, or even the 2020 session to do it when we gathered more information. That was something that I think we needed to take some time and honor the will of the people more. Prop 3, which was Medicaid expansion, really gave me heartburn what we did with that, because basically we covered fewer people than what Prop 3 would have allowed for, and we did it at greater cost. It was an inefficient use of taxpayer funds. That we need more than one waiver. We need four waivers. We've gotten one so far, but if we get all four waivers, we're up to the 90-10 match that we would get under Proposition 3. But until we get all four, we're not at that match. We're spending more money to cover fewer people. So I really had some problems with that. And the answer to the texter's question about why are we making it harder? Good question. I don't think we should be making it harder. We don't have a California problem in Utah. In California, you can easily, relatively speaking, get something on the ballot, and the Constitution of the state of California is hundreds of pages long. Ours is not. We're not amending the Constitution by proposition in Utah. We're just making law. There is room and a place for the legislature to come in and make tweaks as necessary to those things that are passed, but I think they should be very careful. We at the legislature should be very careful about how we make those changes. And quite honestly, people in the state of Utah should vote incumbents out when they feel that those incumbents have made changes that are significant that are not in accordance with the will of the people on these propositions. That's the way you send a message.
Well, and we haven't mentioned yet Prop 4. Brian, when we had you on before the session started, you said you were kind of hearing some mixed responses to this. And, you know, we thought maybe it would be tweaked during the session. Maybe it would go to court. I'm wondering if you have some more information on that. And then Ron and Tim, I want to go to you about Prop 4 as well.
Well, Prop 4 is Better Boundaries, the anti-gerrymandering initiative that was passed by very narrow margin here in the state of Utah, but nevertheless passed. And there was some talk behind the scenes the whole time. I had some insight because I'm on the advisory council in favor of Prop 4. So I know that people who were leading that initiative and that proposition were working with legislative leaders to come up with something that addressed some of the concerns that those legislators had that wouldn't give too much heartburn to the people who were behind Prop 4 didn't happen. I think that you will see it revisited in some fashion moving forward. I don't think it's likely to be seen before the 2020 session. Don't think it's likely to be seen in a special session. But I do think that you're going to see some effort made by both sides to tweak and accommodate that. My hope is that there can be some consensus emerge that makes it something that the backers of Prop 4 don't have too much heartburn with. In other words, that it's a minor tweak. But that's a good example of the legislature having a role and a place to come in and make tweaks to propositions that are passed that may not dishonor the spirit that the people were trying to convey when they passed the proposition.
I believe that Prop 4 actually failed in Wasatch County. It was the only ballot initiative to do so. But Ron and Tim, I'm wondering how you think your districts would change under an independent redistricting commission.
You know, I probably represent the most swingiest. Is that a word, Brian? You're the attorney in the room.
Sounds good.
I have a swing district,
hey, anything
my friend,
goes on the radio.
Don't forget it.
I have the largest swing district here in the state. So, you know, when I hear people talk about gerrymandering, I'm like, really? I would love to see some of that in my district. But I think it's important, regardless of whether it's Prop 4 or it's just the legislature when they redraw the districts, that we look at Park City and we look at Summit County. And I mean, Summit County, I think the population is roughly 46,000 people. When we do a new census in 2020, our legislative districts are probably going to be about 45,000 people. It makes sense to me. I may take some wrath from my leadership for saying this publicly, but it makes sense to me that Summit County, with its population and with its base of ideology, gets its own representative. You know, this is a tough district. I think I do a fairly good job. Emily, you were at the Park City City Council.
They seem to like you.
Last Thursday night, where they congratulated me and thanked me for fighting hard for Park City on areas that I didn't agree with the politics, but I agreed with the policy that the locals ought to be able to make decisions that they want to make. So I think that Park City and Summit County deserve a representative of their own. Whether that comes about, like I said, through the regular or standing legislative process or through Prop 4, I don't know. But let me go back and say something Brian King, Representative King, just said, and I think it's important. Brian, I hope you would chime in when I say this. It's important
for
everyone.
You want me to agree with you?
I do.
Oh, golly.
In that
give me something achievable.
We get along very, very well as Republicans and Democrats in the legislature. Brian and I, in my opinion, have become good friends over the last 3 years. So when I say this next comment, you keep comment in mind.
I agree with you, by the way, on that last part. But don't you're going to tell me something I'm not going to like.
Brian just said that the backers of Prop 4, it would be great to get together with some of the legislative leaders to make some tweaks that would be palatable to both sides. And I think that's what we did in Prop 2. We had the backers of Prop 2 come together with legislative leaders, not that I was in that room, to make tweaks long before the vote was ever taken. To say, look, there are some unintended consequences. These are the people who wrote the ballot initiative. There are some unintended consequences that we didn't realize. This bill, as it's currently written, is a recreational use bill. We need to make some changes. Well, it was way too late to make changes for the ballot question itself. So the backers of the bill, or the initiative, got together with legislative leaders and said, what can we do to fix this? They came up with a compromise together. And I think that's exactly what Representative King is speaking to about Prop 4. So whether changes should be made or not, I don't know. I do find it strange that in a political boundaries commission, part of that ballot initiative said that you can't serve on that commission if you voted in either of the last two non-presidential elections. Now, why would we want someone who doesn't take their civic responsibility to vote seriously to be drawing political boundaries? That's odd to me. So maybe that's a change that we could get together, legislative leaders and the backers of the proposition, and change. I think I understand the intent of that, so that you get less bias, perhaps, but I dare you to find in the state of Utah 7 politically knowledgeable people who are unbiased. In the world we live in, that's just going to be very, very difficult. But I don't have strong feelings about Prop 4, how it happens, and perhaps it's because, like I said, I'm in probably the biggest swing district in the state.
And how about for you, Senator, then, in terms of your district? I mean, how would things change? Or what?
Well,
should it?
Honestly, personally, I do not have a strong feeling one way or the other. I know it has to take place, but my district is really diverse. I mean, you talk Park City, Summit County, and then you talk Eastern Utah and their livelihood. They're not together. I represent five counties. Next to, I think, Senator Hinkins, it's the second largest district that we have, and less populated, and it takes a lot to cover that kind of. And so hopefully when they draw boundaries, that we can do it in a way that we can cut down some of the travel. That might not be popular, but we got into it to serve the people, whoever's elected to serve. Hopefully they keep that in mind. And so whatever it is, you know, I'll live with. If we could all carve it out, that would be the ideal world. But that doesn't make sense. And these guys are right. I mean, I was very impressed, being my first session, how well we got along with each other. There was not fights and that. I mean, we try to do what was best for the people. And they have their opinions. We have ours. We came together on a lot of issues for the betterment of the people.
You know, I was going to open up the phone lines. It's like, look at it, it's like almost 5 of 11 here. But if you do have a question, 435-655-8255. That's 435-655-TALK. We'd be happy to put you on the air to talk to one of your representatives. We've been spending the last hour or so here talking with State Senator Ron Winterton, Representative Tim Quinn, and Representative Brian King. And again, we'd be happy to take your questions. I don't even know that we can get into the short-term rentals, but let's talk that, because I know that's so important here in Park City. It kind of backs up to the affordable housing issue. I mean, can the state crack down on these? I mean, property owners have figured out that they can make as much money renting their units out short-term as they do having somebody in the property year-round. And what's happened is that we're losing at least our resort town, because now we've got, I mean, people renting out units. I mean, we're losing community. Can the state do something? I mean, I know it supported it a couple of years ago.
Well, Representative King looked at me and said, "You take this one, Tim." So, here's what I would say about this particular concern. And I understand cities like Park City are unique, are more unique than many other communities who have these type. Midway has a similar problem, but not to the same scale that Park City does. If we are going to allow, whether that be legally or underneath the table, for there to be short-term rentals, there needs to be a mechanism. Part of why I did my tax reform bill, and I don't think that everything comes back to tax reform, but a lot of it does. Part of the reason I did my tax reform bill is to level the playing field. We already tax some services. Well, why is it fair to tax some and not the others? With short-term rentals, we require all of your kind of legal lodging, your hotels, your condos, to charge an overnight tax. And it's a significant tax and a significant revenue to the state and a significant revenue to Park City. So if there's going to be short-term rentals, there needs to be a mechanism in place that we can require and have some enforceability of those owners collecting the same tax and remitting that same tax. And that not only applies to an individual renting out a room, but VRBOs, Travelocity and those type sites. It's come to my attention through some of the people in Summit County that I'm just using a simple numbers here. Leslie, if you own a home that you want to rent and you said $70 a night and VRBO charges $100, they're collecting tax on the whole $100 and only remitting the tax on the $70 that you had asked for. To me, that's fraud. And we need to do something about that, particularly in this community, as I said, because it's a bigger problem here, to make sure that we level the playing field so that Hotel Park City or any other hotel isn't having to compete on an unfair playing field. If we have a tax, it needs to be spread across every area and every base and be implemented and enforced fairly.
We've got a caller, and caller, you're on the air. Your question?
I have a two-part question. One is, how come we're not supporting EVs more with the state tax? And then my other question is, what can we do to try to get people to idle less? And I think it's really important because there's a lot of cars that are going up and down the canyons that are affecting Salt Lake, which obviously has really bad air.
Okay, I'll let you listen off air. Thanks for your question. Brian, you want to talk?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a proud EV owner, a Chevy Volt owner. I drove that up here today. And you'll be happy to know, listener, that we did allocate, do you remember how many millions of dollars it was, Tim, Ron?
100 million, I think.
Yeah, well, the governor asked for $100 million for clean air, but I think that we...
29.
Was it,
29
it was 29 million. That we ended up putting in for clean air. But a portion of that, and I don't know if you know, Emily, like at least 3 or 4 million was for EV infrastructure. Infrastructure put in place for electric vehicles in the form of charging stations and things like that, which I would love to see more of. So we're moving in the right direction on that. I think that's critically important. And now I can't remember what the second part of the
question was. Idling.
Oh, yeah, idling. Well, you know, we have moved in the direction, in the right direction on that, too. I think that there's a feeling that we ought to leave, my feeling is anyway, that we ought to leave up to the local municipalities the capacity to put in place some enforceable restrictions on idling and not restrict their ability to do so at the state level. There have been some measures, some bills introduced to restrict anti-idling ordinances at the local level, which I would oppose.
435-655-8255. I'll blow through the news, but I know Senator Winterton needs to leave. He's got a big road trip ahead of him here today. Did you want to add something to that conversation?
No, I was just saying on the idling, we have something on the book. It was 3 warnings. It went down to 1, but it's hard to enforce it. And I think it comes back to the original bill was education. Let's educate people, and then we can do a better job. And I think that's where we need to come down to. And if people would understand that the 70% of our air pollution problem is coming out of the tailpipe. And so how do we get that across so that we can have a better environment?
Okay. If there's any more questions, again, you need to make sure that you call right now. Otherwise, we're going to need to wrap this thing up. It's 435-655-8255, and we'll put you on the air, your question on the air. A couple of real things. And hard to believe we spent so much time this session on weak beer. I mean, what was the big deal? Why can't we just have beer in the grocery stores?
Yeah, well, alcohol is a tough topic for the legislature to deal with. Obviously, there's some cultural and religious overtones to that. 90% of the legislature, I think everyone in this room among the legislators is affiliates with the LDS Church. And so, you know, the church weighs in on that, and they have some concerns. And so that's just a political reality that we have to deal with. I didn't have a problem at all with moving from 3.2 to 4.0. I didn't have a problem with the idea of moving from 3.2 to 4.8. So I think that's I agree with you, Leslie. It's a bit of a nothing burger from my perspective.
Yeah, I think from the Senate perspective, I was trying to think, it passed out of the Senate pretty good numbers.
Almost unanimously, I think.
Yeah, we didn't talk or spend a lot of time on it because it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Any fallout from last year's legislation where we lowered the blood alcohol content from 0.08% to 0.05%? Seems to be working well, or?
Yeah, I think that the effect, it's almost a prophylactic effect in the sense that I think what you've got is more people who are more careful about getting on the roads at all if they've had anything to drink. And you can make a decent argument to say that that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's a good thing. So we'll see. I thought we put that in place a little too quickly. I would have liked to have taken some more time to study it, put in place maybe a warning from 0.05 to 0.08. I thought that would have been better. But, you know, look, if we save lives on the road, I'm all for that. So maybe in the end it'll all work out.
You started to jump in there, Tim.
To say.
It's like, you're looking at me with a – you have a look on your face, Tim, that is
unimpressed.
This
just reminds me of the legislative session. You just jump in every time you get a chance, Brian. Well, I was going to say basically what Brian said, whether it's – because of enforcement or just people becoming more aware of, hey, I really don't want to get a DUI ticket, I think it has drastically reduced the number of drunk drivers on the road. And if you look at the statistics, we're 50th in the nation as far as fatalities on our roads because of drunk driving. So I was supportive of the bill, and I think it's doing its job.
And then one other kind of personal issue here, the daylight savings. It gets brought up every year. Can we please just make a decision on this? Can we just stay mountain time? Can we stay mountain daylight time? I mean, do we?
Here's the problem, Leslie. You got 3 choices, not 2. You can stay with daylight savings time all year round. You can stay with the status quo, or you can stay on regular mountain time all day long. And from my listening to people, it's split about 3 ways equally. So getting a consensus of 50% plus,
maybe a ballot,
that's a
initiative?
Challenge. Oh, did not tell me that.
Leslie, I have one more question for our legislators. I don't know if we're heading out soon, but you know, there were really some large topics that dominated this session. Medicaid, tax reform, ballot initiatives, the things that we brought up. But I'm hoping you all can tell me one bill that you think went under the radar that was really important and people should know about. Just one bill.
I can do that.
Please jump in.
I mean, each of you.
Oh, you don't want me jumping in on other occasions, Tim. Go on. I'll tell you one. Raising the age of purchase of tobacco products to 21. That got very little attention. In the past, we've tried to do that, and it got it was very controversial and got shot down. It passed under the radar, I think, and I think that was a very positive thing. I'll go on record and loud and proud. I don't see a good use for tobacco. It's hard for me to tolerate it in the sense that I think it does nothing, does a couple of things, both bad really quickly. It addicts you, and it'll kill you over time. And so moving the ages up to 21, I thought, was a good thing.
Not only that, but in conjunction with that, we also passed something that Representative Paul Ray had been trying for 9 sessions, I think, to raise the tax on tobacco products or e-cigarettes specifically. Finally passed, and frankly, it passed with very little fanfare and very little dissent in the House. So I think those two bills in conjunction with one another went a long way to curb.
In fact, were they part of the same bill?
No, they were not. One was Steve Ellison, one was Paul Ray.
Yeah.
Ron, is there one bill that you can think of?
I know there is one, but I can't think of what it
is.
It's
because I put you on the spot.
That's how insignificant it felt.
Yeah, but I was disappointed because it actually, we should have had more input from cities and counties on it. And how it got through.
On the tobacco bill?
No. No, but
the
one I can't remember.
On the gravel pits?
No, that was highly profile. No, but I was just surprised. I was going back through my notes, and I was looking at my voting record, and there was one, and I'm going, I don't remember this one. Well, I had to go to a community impact board meeting, and so I missed 2 committee meetings, and that's when the discussions was held, and so I missed about 8 votes, and I'm going, oh, I didn't realize that, so I went and read the bill, and I thought I should have been there to speak up because I don't think it was a good bill.
Well, you let us know when you remember, okay?
And I know that you said that you need to take off, but I do have one more phone call, so I'm going to let that be that. Are you still there, caller? Nope, they hung up. So I want to, again, show our appreciation for you guys making the time to get up here and to be part of this roundtable discussion. It's so difficult, I know, for you all during the legislative session, so an opportunity to finally get you together. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
State Senator Ron Winterton from District 26, Representative Brian King of District 28, and District 54 Representative Tim Quinn. You've been listening to Utah Politics Now. I'm Leslie Thatcher on behalf of Emily Means. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. You're listening to KPCW Park City. We're going to get right into